Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Game of London podcast. My name is Stuart DeVille and we are here today at WAS. We have been interviewing over 2 days all of the indies who are here showcasing, or at least as many as we could get hold of, to get their top tips and to learn more about their games. Here are some of the games that showcased as part of the Barclays Demo Day.
I am James Lightfoot and head of Lightfoot Brothers Games. I'm kind of the main person, really. Even though it's called Lightfoot Brothers, my brother is part of it, but he's more of the music kind of side of things, write some stuff. And yeah, I just find, you know, creative people I know to work with to make games. So the name of the game is Sleepy Time Village. It's a creepy point and click adventure game where you play as Rufus, who is a neglectful, workaholic, bad father, bad husband. One day he falls asleep in the back of a cab on the way to a meeting after work and wakes up in a children's storybook world full of strange creatures and villagers and an omnipresent narrator. And he must find redemption to be free of this crazy village. I had just finished a point-and-click game that I made a few years ago. I then started making a run-and-gun 2D platform adventure, which I still am making, and working with a fantastic artist friend of mine. But he was being a bit slow, and I'm very impatient. So I was like, I'm going to make another point-and-click adventure. I must keep doing things. So I went to my friend Steve, who makes comics. He's also an amazing musician. And I'd seen one of his comic series, and I said, listen, I want to make a point-and-click game out of that comic series. He said, no, I'm writing and I've almost finished an amazing graphic novel called Sleepy Time Village. I think you should make the game from that. So I looked at it and I was like, this is perfect. The same team who did that, the artist, Steve, the writer, and the editor, were all up for thus becoming a team and making, turning it into a point and click game. And it's been a great experience because like we're really developing the you know, that world, the story. A graphic novel is very linear, you know, page turn. Whereas this, obviously, we had to almost add the Z plane to it, you know, like just really enhance and expand it. So that's how it came about. I think the most challenging part is taking a story that is linear and how do you keep the story the same, but, you know, kind of add those puzzles in. The expansion, as much fun as it is, you've really got to keep it true to the story without kind of suddenly, for no reason, Rufus, the protagonist, is doing things that don't really make sense. And I think we have really, you know, nailed that down, and it does feel really like a companion piece to the novel and vice versa. And I guess with point-and-click adventure games, with narrative adventure games, the most important thing is not to have moon logic, right? You've got to have puzzles that make sense, but not too obvious, but not, you know, I'm going to use the chicken with the door. Oh, it opened. Why? Yeah. Why would we never do that? So I think trying to keep that whilst keeping it inventive, fun, and a little bit crazy is the most challenging.
Do you have any advice for fresh new indie developers?
Start off making games quickly. Like, don't spend too long on things. Just go for it. Get it done. Be proud of it. And then make another one, because the learning of putting something out there and getting the feedback from devs, or seeing actually, oh, why did I do that? I should have, you know, waited for Steam Next Fest or something like that to launch my game, or with a Kickstarter, I need to build a community, or whatever it is. Put things out there, you get great feedback, and then make another one. Once you've done a few games, you can spend years on them, because you will end up spending years anyway. Yeah. But just try and get it out there to get the feedback. I'd like to give a shout out for the Kickstarter we're currently doing. You can find the link on our social media. So yes, please back our Kickstarter. There's some great rewards in there, great physical stuff. And yeah, it'll be such a great game if you can get it funded. So please, pledge.
My name is Spencer, and I am the game director at Inner Loop. The name of the game is Rhythm Towers, and it's all about using music to save the planet Rhapsody. So it's a combination of rhythm action and tower defense. I came up with the idea because I was playing a tower defense game and had the game music muted and had my own music that I was making on in the background. I was kind of tapping along on the controller on beats to my own music. I thought, I wonder if there's a way of combining these two things together. I put together a little prototype in Dreams on the PS4. Sent it to a few friends, put it on the Dreamiverse, got some great feedback, and everyone's kind of saying, we want this to be a full game. So opened up Unreal Engine, and that was 4 years ago. I would say the most challenging part has just been the split of my time across many different disciplines, from doing the programming, to the game design, to 3D modeling, to texturing, to animating, to even doing the motion capture for the dance moves for the characters. Yeah, it's trying to balance my time across multiple different disciplines is, yeah, very challenging. For fresh new indie developers, I would say the best thing you can do is start working on your game. Stop reading tutorials, stop trying to decide which game engine you just pick one, start making something. It's not until someone actually plays it that you can actually, you know, get a good idea of where you're going right, where you're going wrong, what people like, what they don't like. So start making something, get someone playing it, and then just keep iterating from there. So you can wishlist the game right now on Steam. The game still has about a year of development to go. It will be on PC and consoles to be announced at a further date. But it will also have couch co-op, online multiplayer as well. So yeah, it won't just be single player mode. There's many different ways you can play. And there will also be support for a dance mat as well.
My name is Max Portugal. I am the sort of project lead for Team Scara and also the lead programmer and art director for it. Our game is Scara VR. It is a VR puzzle action adventure game in which it is set in sort of a tower in the middle of the desert on a planet that is decaying effectively. You've been sent there to sort of seek salvation, and as you activate the tower, the AI in it basically says, you're not supposed to be here, I'm gonna put you in jail, effectively. It also doesn't know why the tower was turned off in the first place, and there is no one around to basically figure it out, so it lets you out on the condition that you help it reactivate the tower, but it also has to sort of work against you because that's what it was programmed to do. So it's sort of working with it and against it to try and figure out what is the mystery behind this tower, and will you be able to actually help your people? So it's been a long process for sort of like refining the idea. The whole game premise started as a third year project, and the main thought behind it was, I want to work with a particular kind of mechanic. So it was a third person game, a completely different setting, and I was just like, I want to make this work. And what I found is that mechanic could translate into VR very well, so I decided to test that. I really liked how it was working, so I decided to pivot in a different direction. And then when it came to the art style, I started drawing in reference from some of my favorite games. So things like Breath of the Wild and its shrines, the Orokin from Warframe for like the art style of it, the Forerunner from Halo as well. And so we started blending in aspects of things that we all enjoy effectively. And that sort of started to create this unique effect for it, where it's sort of a blend of everything that we really enjoy. And then the story has just been coming along as we've been going.
What was the most challenging part of developing your game?
I would say probably the fact that when it comes to VR, you have to deal with working with an actual person. Because everyone's different, everyone has their own like way of moving and working around with things, and you have to constantly work with the fact that you're dealing with actual people. So if I make a table in the game, if that table's too small, a person thinks they're a giant. If it's too big, they think they're tiny. So it actually has to match with what people will assume the real world is like. So that means going out, taking measurements, looking at actual architecture, looking at real furniture design, as well as making sure that the gameplay fits with what people will expect. So if you pick up a ball, that ball will have physics, and so you can't just press it through your wall or like just walk through walls like you're a ghost. So you have to make that work and also make it so that they don't throw up if you like push them back or move them in some sort of way. So it's sort of that human aspect is sort of the most challenging part of our development so far. Definitely think about the business side of your projects. I think for us, we had a really good idea, but not so much a thought of how we're going to tackle the business side of things. And so we've sort of had to slam our heads through it as it's come through. And it has worked for us so far, but a bit more pre-planning would have made our lives a lot easier. I would also say definitely look at getting funding from like UK grants and things like that. We worked with Transfuser, and one of the major benefits out of that has been getting to conventions like WSD and EGX, as well as getting into contact with industry people, because obviously, like, if you don't have a connection, it's really hard to build a connection. And so trying to get out there and get connected really opens up your options massively. Whereas if you try and work in isolation and you're like, I've got the best idea in the world, but nobody knows about it, it's really hard to make that work. So we have a Steam page right now, which anyone can go wishlist our game. We're going to be having the demo released on that Steam page pretty soon, like hopefully within the next couple of months after this WSD convention, so people can have a playtest of it and see if it's something they like, and then hopefully buy the early access version to help support our team.
My name's Alex Jones, and I'm the founder of Silverscript Games, which means I do most things, as all indie developers do. But my background's in audio, so I have a lot of focus on the dialogue of the game and the music. But I also learned blueprints and just made the game from that as well. So I'm the writer and the designer and all of that jazz. My game's called The Quiet Things. It's a narrative exploration game, kind of similar to things like Gone Home and What Remains of Edith Finch, but it's also my personal autobiography. So it's based on diary entries that I kept when I was a child and teenager, and it covers topics around mental health and abuse and the impact that has on a person. I think I made a game that I liked playing, so a lot of the games, even like Dear Esther, was probably the first walking simulator style game that I played, and I really liked how a lot of mechanics were stripped back and the focus on dialogue and how you have these really impactful moments with fairly minimal gameplay, and so that inspired the kind of style of the game. And then of course the story is my personal story, so I lived through quite a lot of difficult things around abuse and homelessness, and the game tackles stuff around grooming and like suicidal feelings, which, you know, they're really difficult to talk about, but we do it in the game because it's a good way to tackle those kind of things and try and lift the stigma around that. I mean, it's pretty challenging, like, diving back into your history of some, like, really traumatic things that have happened. But, I mean, I've had a lot of therapy, as we all should. But it's actually slightly worse having other people, like, voice act those things, because you don't know what their own backgrounds are. And so while I've dealt with it, I don't know how it's going to impact other people. And that's, like, the hardest thing when working with really challenging topics is making sure that, one, we're not traumatizing the players, second, we're not traumatizing the team, and the voice actors can have enough breaks and deal with the content at a good pace, not like forcing them through something really traumatic, which maybe film and TV have more safeguarding around, but I don't know really, I've never worked in it. So yeah, there's a lot of things that's difficult around that, but I hope we do it well. It's a really tricky time at the moment, isn't it? Like with a lot of layoffs and getting funny jobs in the industry, but I'm hopeful that it's also a good time to be an indie, in that we've got a little bit of space to make games that the AAAs would never take a risk on. So maybe, I mean, I started working on my game when I was a student, and it was quite a while ago now, but if you've got that passion project that you're just doing little bits on and you've got time to do it, then I'd recommend doing that, because it's what you care about ultimately that you make the best things from. Well, we don't have a release date yet, but probably sometime next year, but definitely wishlist our game.
Hi, I'm Julia Spinola, and I'm kind of the studio lead game designer person at Beyond Tomorrow Studios. Sleep Swimmer is the name of our game, and it is all about a girl who's so anxious that in her dreams she goes to an underwater town full of salamander people, and there she swims around and collects different sounds for the salamanders, and mixes them together in her DJ set to create beautiful underwater music. The game is a narrative exploration game that has this DJ element, and you kind of get your DJ skills up and meet a bunch of cute salamanders and hang out underwater. Basically, I love the ocean and I love marine life and underwater creatures, and I really wanted to make a game originally about noise pollution underwater, and it kind of tied into this theme of like anxiety and overstimulation that I was having in my life. I think what the underwater creatures are going through with this noise pollution is kind of similar to what us humans go through when we're kind of inundated with so much stuff going on in our lives that we can't sift through it all and find peace. So that was kind of the core idea of it, and how we can use music to calm ourselves and get out of those stressful times. The most challenging part is how long it actually takes to make a game. Our team has worked so hard for so long, and it's just, we've had really great times where we have enough funding to all work on it together, and other times where we all have to go and get other jobs to survive. And so it's hard to keep the momentum going and hard to know what features to keep in, what features to scrap. But it's all about the journey, and it's been really fun. My top advice for fresh new indie developers would be to start small and make short games that you can actually release. I think I wish I had made something shorter that I could have released earlier on, rather than like poured my heart and soul into something that's going to take years of my life. Our game is wishlistable on Steam right now if you look up Sleep Swimmer. We're hoping to release towards the end of the summer, as long as nothing goes wrong.
So I'm Jan, I'm director at Dragon Spring Studios. But I also do game dev, game design and programming. I mean, the game is called Set Sail with exclamation mark, that's important. And it's a top-down party adventure game with pirates. It's like Overcooked meets Sea of Thieves. So it's up to four players, hectic gameplay. Collaboration, but as soon as you get your swords, you're probably going to fight your friends. We had two ideas in our third year in university. One, which was this one. It was based on just childhood memories about pirates and just fun related to it. The other one was really complex physics-based game. So we decided, okay, let's stick to the easier one for now. Our ideas kept changing all the time. So it's deciding on what should stay and what should go. We started with plenty of mechanics and systems that we worked on for a long time. So scrapping them was a good choice, but also painful for us because, yeah. We used to have this system that was giving you ranks, so you could be a boatswain, first mate, captain, and then one other rank, I can't remember right now. And it was based on points and the way you interact with level, and then you could kill your friends to get the rank. So it's like a desertion kind of idea of a desertion in a game. It was quite complex. It worked at the end, but I just realized it's too much, especially if you want to aim for younger audience that we wanted to be very accessible, so we wanted them to just pick up the controller and play, and we thought that that's too much to explain, so that's why we decided to scrap it.
What would be your top advice for a fresh new indie developer?
Be passionate what you're doing, but also remember that game is not everything. As much as it hurts to admit, even if you make a great game but no one knows about it, no one will play it, so you need to focus on building your business and market your game and market your studio as much as you focus on the game.
Yeah. So think about the big picture as much as the...
Yeah, as much as the... Obviously, it goes both ways. Even if you are well-known studio but you don't have a great game, it still doesn't work. So you need to focus on both of the things. Current game, Set Sail with exclamation mark, you can wishlist it on Steam. We aim to release it next year in September. But... And that's all I'm going to say right now, because the other thing is not announced yet. And it's, yes.
Ooh, yes.
My name is Archie Crampton. I am the technical director at Inkforge Studios. The name of our game is I'll Be Brave Tomorrow. And essentially it is a narrative driven adventure game where you play as a 6-year-old called Robin who has to find escapism through a 2D platformer. We're working very closely with Great Ormond Street and we're donating 50% of the revenue to Great Ormond Street. Originally it's inspired by a novel, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. The story of Sam and Sadie in that novel, they meet while Sam's in hospital as he's broken his leg and they bond over a 2D platformer. And so we've taken an inspiration from that, plus my co-director Tom, he was a child at Great Ormond Street Hospital. He's been there since he was 3 months old and he's 20 now and still every 6 months he has to go for checkups. And so his experiences plus the novel plus our own creations kind of all blended together. I think the most challenging part for me is keeping scope. Myself and Tom being co-directors, Tom is a very grandiose man. He has lots of ideas and I have to shoot him down on a lot of them, but just to make a good game, yeah, trying to keep the scope as small as possible.
What would be your top advice for fresh new indie developers?
My advice would be to just start. That's the advice we got, to just do it. Even if you're at university, like myself in the studio, we're doing this outside of university in our free time, so just start making games, put them on Steam, put them on itch, and yeah, try and break even if you put it on Steam, and just keep going and making more games. We have a demo that's out now to play on Steam. We have a Next Fest demo, which is coming out on June 10th, and the full release will be in September.
Tom Keane, I am the game director of Dead Meat, and our studio is called Meaning Machines. Our game is called Dead Meat. It's a free text murder mystery interrogation game in which you can ask the suspect anything to try and crack the case. As a studio, we've been really exploring how conversation can collide with gameplay for about the last 6 years. And in particular, we've been looking at this idea of a new genre, which we call the first-person talker. And the first-person talker is kind of an ideal we have, that we want to be the pioneers of what that can be. And this started a number of years ago with my game Unknown Number, which was a game about phone calls and conducting a heist over a telephone line. And really, it's evolved into Dead Meat, which at the moment we think is the apex of it, which is open conversation that is deep and meaningful, but is also gamified and compelling. At the same time. The most challenging part of developing an indie game is by far funding, in a massive sense. I mean, we're very lucky because we've received a bunch of funding from various different sources, but actually getting publishers to actually support your game, especially if your game is pushing new ground, is really hard. And I think especially now, the climate for funding is incredibly dire. And so, you know, publishers are either looking for surefire hits, or what they're looking for is some really aggressive recoup costs. And we have high hopes that's going to change quite soon, but that's our current experience of the scenario. So our funding is by hook or by crook and not through publishers currently. The advice that I once got that I thought was really good was make the game that only you would make. And you know, and I think it's that thing of, if that means inventing a new genre, then do it. And I think that's the purist in me that would say that. I think there is probably some more practical advice I might give, which is like, make the game other people want you to make, if you want to get funding and if you want to, you know, be part of that ladder. But I mean, I came about it in a slightly strange way. I had a different career before this, and then I kind of like jumped into this very naively a number of years ago. And it's been really hard, but obviously it's been deeply valuable. And for me, if your passion is doing experimental work, then go do it. But expect it to be a hard road. And I'm sure there are easier roads than the ones I've taken.
There's that classic line that if you want to make money, don't be a game developer. But if you want to do something that you kind of love and enjoy, then change your themes, I guess.
Definitely. The Lucia's story, the demo, is up on Steam. It's not playable right now. We're keeping it behind closed doors while we're in some important discussions. But please do go wishlist it. And it will be out in June 2025, he says very optimistically. I'm sure it will be a different date from that, but that's currently what we're aiming for and currently what we're trying to do.
I
I'm Petr Naď. I'm from GamesFarm, which is a game development company which I founded more than 25 years ago in Slovakia. It's a development company which focuses on the development of RPG games and basically co-development and helping some other devs as well. But we are focusing also on our own product. So it's not only about helping others, but we want to create our own games as well. Our latest releases were Vikings Wars of Midgard, Shadows Awakening, and since we have worked on several unannounced games. And because we were trying to land the deal last year and find a partner for our next big ARPG, but we failed because of the situation in the industry. So we were looking for the options, what we can do, and what we created is like it's a new angle on Viking survivors kind of game. So we basically bring Diablo level production values into the Viking survivors, and we can, if you have a Diablo and Vampire Survivor, that will be a baby. So that's the game which we are showing the first time at this show, and. During all the years, like, we are struggling to find our position in the industry. We were missing the way how to go to the market. So a couple of years ago, I founded Grindstone as a kind of publishing company, which aims to help small indie devs like we are and help to bring them their products to the market. It's something that we want to share with other devs as well. So it's kind of other developers don't have to take the hard experience which we have had over the years with GamesFarm, and basically help the other the indies become successful. So that's the vision in short. Nice. But a part of that, like, we also founded a conference in Slovakia, which we are running for 7 years, which is called Game Days. And you are all pretty much, very much invited to come over. It's happening 7th to 9th of November. It's to help indies to connect together. Last year, we had like almost 800 people attending. And we are building up the entire ecosystem in Slovakia, helping small indies like find the communication. We have created the co-development hub in Košice, where we have the studios and basically Grindstone sharing the ideas, working very closely together and helping each other, sharing the resources, and kind of is a very great things to do.
So how do you find juggling the whole working on your own game, working on other people's games, and trying to support the community at the same time?
It is difficult, but I think it will be for the players to judge like how much we succeeded, and we have like a lot of experience. We have been really doing this kind of games for many years, so the feedback which we are getting from the players and from our business partners is amazing, and so I'm quite hopeful that this could be something which will appeal to a lot of players.
What advice would you have for a fresh new indie starting out?
Oh, that's a good question. And tough one as well. I mean, we did it the hard way, so we effectively never worked in the industry. We learned, we did, I think, every possible mistake and everything, learned the hard way. So it might be good to avoid it and try to maybe enter the industry in a less expensive way, learn with some good companies and get some first network. But, and from my perspective, is like try to build up your network, network of the people whom you are working with, because the people are the key value in my experience. And I'm really like my network of the people, they are keeping me, they keep me going because they can help. And the bigger the network and closer the connections, it really is the key value, because these people, they are creating these games. And if you are usually connecting with the people who are like you, and together, people can create great things.